Hi, I'm Tammy Greenberg, Senior Vice President, Business Development at the RAB, and welcome to Radio on Main Street, the podcast all about radio. Our latest series comes to you from the 2024 ANA Masters of Marketing Conference in Orlando, Florida, where we consumed 4 full days of content from chief marketers across leading brands. The conference theme was setting the agenda for growth, and we heard a lot about creating unparalleled consumer engagement with help from advanced technology like AI. We heard a lot about creativity, a laser focus on what matters most to consumers, and never ever losing sight of humanity as tech continues to expand. RAB had the opportunity to chat with many attendees and speakers about their business, their marketing goals, the issues that they're most focused on, and of course, their thoughts about radio. Upper Right is a content supply chain company that helps marketers with everything from editorial content strategy and how-tos, if you will, for copy creation and design, to distributing the content and optimizing the creative to perform better. Today's marketers are producing more content, more creative, and are looking to do this more efficiently. Alan Shulman, Managing Partner, Chief Creative and Content Officer from Upper Right, is helping them to do just that. Alan was at the ANA conference to unveil part 2 of the ANA's playbook entitled Generative AI in Creative and Content Generation. And he took some time to sit down for a chat with Mike Hulvey, RAB's President and CEO.
Radio on Main Street continues from the ANA, and Alan, thanks for joining us, and give our listeners a little bit of background behind who you are, what you do, and we've got an interesting conversation ahead.
So I'm Alan Shulman. I am, most of my career has been spent as a chief creative officer. I started out as a copywriter. Back in the Mad Men days, so I'm revealing my age.
Did you smoke cigarettes and drink coffee all day?
I never smoked cigarettes, although my bosses in the early days in Chicago were the 3-martini lunch Mad Men types, right? But I would say that, you know, from my early days as a copywriter to then becoming a creative director to then becoming more of a creative manager, and then when digital came along, you know, obviously moving from, you know, more traditional advertising type of campaigns to what we do now, which is a whole lot of digital and a whole lot of everything,
right?
To make the same number of impressions. I currently serve as chief creative and content officer of a company called Upper Right, which is a content supply chain company. When we say content supply chain, what does that mean? That means everything from editorial content strategy to how you design and create copy and content and creative, to how you produce it and distribute it, to then how you optimize it to perform better. All of those things are things that have changed massively, particularly now with AI. So we're down here at the ANA talking with marketers about how they're trying to get more content and more creative produced for less, how they need to do it faster, and how they need it to perform better. So we're not a software or a product company at all, but we do help clients get their content right.
All right, there's a lot to unpack there. I want to go back. I want to draw a line back to the Mad Men days.
Sure.
And then to today. What lessons did you learn in those early days with the your boss is not you, the 3-martini lunches, but back in the, you know, those golden days, they've been, you know, made to seem very romantic back in the day. I'm too young, I missed all of that.
Right.
The lessons you learned there that are still applicable to today.
So the fundamental things that Mark Pritchard from P&G talked about yesterday, where does the consumer truth intersect with your brand truth? Find the place where those two things intersect. And that's where you need to create your messaging. If you know what the consumer truth is about your product, about your category, about the state of the world, about the moments that matter, which is what Mark talked about,
right?
And you know where your brand fits in with that, those fundamental truths have been the same for forever, right? Our job as message makers is to understand who it is we're trying to reach, what it is we're putting in front of them in terms of a message, and then where are we trying to reach them? The thing that's changed so radically is the where we reach them, because that's become fragmented, and there's now where we used to run, you know, television, radio, we do some print advertising, we'd create some billboards, and we'd run a coupon in the Sunday paper. Those were the five things we did in the Mad Men days. Now we do 27 things to reach the same number of people. It's just become more matrixed and more complex. However, the fundamental challenge on the creative side has been the same.
Is it as much fun?
I would say it's not the same amount of fun, because in doing 27 things, you're holding up a piece, a post you did every day going, did this thing do anything at the end of the day? It's not the same as doing a broad scale campaign like we used to do, and that part is less fun. I think the part that's more fun now is just all of these new tools that are coming online that we can create with. So that's why I'm down here. I'm presenting today on Gen AI and creative and content. I was honored to co-author the first ANA playbook on Gen AI and creative and content, and today I'm presenting part two.
All right. How much has the world changed from book one to book two?
Significantly. Like, in 1 year, we went from sort of this novelty thing called Gen AI, where we saw some really interesting campaigns from Kraft and Nestle. Heinz Ketchup did some really interesting things in year one. But it was sort of brands dabbling in with these tools, and sort of there was a novelty aspect of it. We've seen a lot of one-offs done with using Gen AI tools. Now we're just at the point where companies are starting to say, okay, systematically, there are these tools that will really accelerate content and creative production. Not just the making of a video or a commercial, but if we have 19 different languages, if we're a global global brand and we need 19 different versions of the same hero post, how quickly can we do that? And these tools are letting you do it literally in a fraction of the time. And that's going to save a lot of cost. And it's going to allow creative craftspeople, whether they're copywriters, art directors, designers, coders, it's going to enable them to focus on the high-value tasks that they do instead of the menial things that, frankly, machines should be doing.
Well, it's interesting because the conversations around AI have been around from the productivity perspective, not necessarily the creative perspective. And one may be the same, but if you allow the technology to do this, it creates time capacity for the human to do what only the human can do.
That's right. That's
which
right.
is to be creative.
That's right. You know, it's still technology. It's a tool at the end of the day. I always say, don't put the plumbing before the poetry. Start with the poetry and start with the idea, which is a lot of what we heard this week at the conference. You still have to start with the central intersection of the brand and the customer truth, right? And you have to sort of start there. You have to remember that technology is a glittering lure. And over time, all these technologies change and they fade away. What sticks around are human emotions. Love, affection, all the things that we generally feel as humans. So I think you're right. I think that if we put the technologies to work as tools, they are not the idea. They are the enablers. We're still the pilot. They're the co-pilot, as Microsoft likes to say. But the truth of the matter is, I think that's where we are. And I think we're now in this sort of transition from trying this stuff out, bringing it to work with us, using ChatGPT or using MidJourney or using some of these tools to sort of dabble in what can Gen AI do, to saying how can we systematically really use these tools to accelerate production as opposed to being the idea, because that's the wrong way to use it. That's putting the plumbing ahead of the poetry, and we don't want to do that.
Let's talk about audio. Where does audio fit in this ecosystem and radio specifically?
So audio is a huge opportunity, right? But, you know, we've seen how the spoken word and narrative and podcasting, synopsis like this, this is just a new format of creative content, right? Mm-hmm. And it's very human. It's very one-to-one. So it's very honest and it's very believable. So I think that's why it's gotten sticky from that standpoint. On the music side of things, I think it's taken a different path. I think the algorithms that have taken over radio aren't necessarily a good thing. As a performing musician myself and a Spotify artist, as well as a, you know, my music is on every platform.
We'll get to that in a minute.
But I'm saying that because on the music side, I think that we don't have the level of curation. We have algorithms curating. We don't have what radio had, which is DJs curating, program directors curating, and really bringing us the stuff that, you know, whether the old days of payola had had an effect on the business or not, we still look to those DJs for what should I listen to. And then that transitioned to the era of we'd go into Tower Records and here there were those stacks of CDs, and what were the ones that everybody bought? The ones that most of them were missing from. So there's a paradox of choice, that's a book. If we have too much choice, and a lot of these algorithms and streaming services give us too much choice, what radio did is sort of curated and filtered that. And the thing that I think was great about radio as a medium is that it gave us an opportunity to do that. It hasn't had the opportunity to do that in the world of everything in my pocket. So I'm having to self-curate for myself and discover for myself, as opposed to the channel doing it for me. And that can be good and bad.
As a creative and someone who has been, you know, invested in the space in a very long time, do you have a message for broadcasters? You know, what's happening on the those that are running and leading this industry and every day producing content? Do you have a message for those individuals?
Yeah, I mean, in terms of radio, the thing I love about radio for marketers is it's theater of the mind. And what I don't see happening of the broadcasters is bringing to life the ability to make people use their imagination. When I was coming up in the business in Chicago, there was a guy named Joe Bicerni. He was the cheer guy for Leo Burnett, who did the cheer commercials. He was on camera, but he had a company called Cerny American Creative, and it included voices like Deb LaCosta and Dan Castellaneta and people. They went on to become the voice of The Simpsons. These were voices that could literally make stuff up in your mind, like, and you would sit there and listen to the theater of the mind, like, Mom, there's a man on a horse with a whip in the frozen food section. And she said, that's the third time this week. Now, when you hear that on the radio and you imagine that, you can picture that description. And I think what the broadcasters in the radio space need to do is get back to putting the magnifying glass over what's really dramatic about radio. And that's enabling people to imagine things in a way that, just like when you read a book, you had to picture it for yourself. Radio also makes you picture it for yourself. And my message to them is, get back to the inherent drama of radio, which is be a better curator and let people use theater of the mind more than you have been. Because I think we got away from that.
Wonderful. So you are spot on. You know, the connection to our listeners, the connections to our community, that local, you know, piece, and then delivering these amazing messages that get people to think bigger and beyond is... Again, I grew up on Chicago radio too, and
yeah, well, radio is a great canvas to create with, and that's why I'm surprised. You know, when we sort of went to more algorithmic style radio, I think that what is lost there is that production director who was sitting in the back room with tape machines figuring out clever ways to get people to imagine what a Sunday car dealer sale was going to be like. And I think we got away from using the imagination and the power of the medium to do that. There used to be, the RAB used to have this great campaign, which was, there was a giant banana with four legs, and the headline of the poster said, I heard it on the radio. But it was really, I saw it on the radio.
Yep.
And that trade campaign, which ran, those posters were on the wall when I worked at Footcone and Belding in Chicago. Those posters were on the wall to remind us to use the medium and use the theater of the mind to get people to imagine things for brands that they couldn't on television, or that they certainly can in digital media.
All right, so our those that are watching the video of this, see this man's eyes light up and the excitement on his face. Now, if you're listening, you can also see it in your mind's eye, and it's all pure. I mean, it's very authentic, and I love that. Okay. We said we're going to talk about music for just a second.
Sure.
You and your wife have this little thing that you love to entertain people in the jazz space. Do tell.
Well, so my wife is more of the entertainment. I'm more of the jazz musician. I grew up as a jazz guitarist. I wrote ads. I was a copywriter by day. I played jazz at night, 15 years in Chicago. Then I came to New York. I did the same when I met my wife, Stacy. She was a vocalist and theater person trained at Northwestern University. Mm. She was a singer, and we didn't even know. We sort of met through the ad business. I was at McCann. She was at Initiative. When we met, we started to make music together, and I discovered she had a beautiful voice. And so we started to make music together when we first got together. And we sort of... We made one record together in Italy when we first back in 2011, just to sort of proof of concept. Mm-hmm. Can we be musical? It wasn't like it was designed to be a husband and wife thing. But then from there, it sort of mushroomed, and we brought other players in, and we started performing more in New York City, and we sort of built a following. And now we have this group, As Is, which is Alan and Stacy Is. Mm-hmm. And we bring other musicians into the fold, and we sort of do... sort of what I will call new interpretations of standard great American songbook tunes.
Awesome. See, now you've given the listener and viewer something to go look for.
Okay. Well, I don't want to do a commercial for us.
But, I gave you a plug. You're good.
I appreciate that.
You're good.
But look, at the end of the day, I think that any sort of the old can become new again. That's what we're trying to do in music. And I think the old becomes new if we just get back to what Leo Burnett used to say, which is find the inherent drama in your product, put a magnifying glass over it, and make it larger than life. And if you figure out a way to, whether you're a brand, if you can figure out how to do that for your brand, or whether you're a channel like radio, find your inherent drama and make it larger than life. And I think that is the power of radio. And I miss it. I miss it. I miss creating for it. And I miss it on the air, because I think the more that we rely that the plumbing to supersede the poetry of what we do as humans, the more we're going to get stuff that's formulaic and not interesting to people. And my hope is that we don't allow AI and AI-generated audio like we just saw from Google's Notebook ML podcasts, right? Fascinating to see. But if that becomes the de facto for how we can create podcasts, then the conversation we're having here is lost.
I wouldn't hate to see AI try to replicate you and I. That would be... Maybe it would, you
That's
know.
A scary thought.
Yes.
It might. Hopefully it'll make me look better and younger, but I don't know.
All right, two final questions.
Sure.
Our standard dismount, if you will. Radio matters because...
So radio matters because localism matters. And radio to me, first and foremost, is in my local vicinity in which I live, I rely on radio not just to tell me the weather and the traffic and which football team won Friday night, but I rely on it because it is a reflection of my community and what's around me. That's one reason radio matters, is because localism matters to me. The second reason that radio matters is because, as I said before, it gives you an opportunity to both curate and to comment and to put people forward in a way that podcasts, frankly, which some of them just ramble on and on and on. You know, the great thing about why radio matters is because in a very packaged period of time, you get what you need, and you get it without having to speed forward or back up and sift through a whole lot of stuff that frankly frustrates me about podcasts, because I have to go back and forth to get to what's the real point they're trying to make here. And I think whether it's news directors, music directors, program directors, I think that's another reason radio matters.
All right. Well, our last question, which I think you've already answered, and if you want to revise in your remarks, which is great, but radio works because?
Radio works because it is a great curator, and it doesn't make me become the curator, and I trust it to be the curator if I like both the format and I'm a loyal listener of the station. And, as I said before, it gives me an opportunity to use my mind and imagine, It's theater of the mind. Not just for advertisers who are in radio, but generally it makes me imagine and think about things in a different way than speeds and feeds on my phone, swipe, tap, and or, like I just said, scrolling through lots of downtime in YouTube or downtime in podcasts that's just, frankly, dead air and banter.
Thank you so much for sharing your passion, your creativity, and clearly a love of audio.
My pleasure.
Appreciate it.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you.
All right.
Wow. Alan shared so many quotable insights throughout this interview, and I'd just like to wrap this up by highlighting a few of our favorite insights. First, understanding where consumer truth intersects with a brand's truth is where messaging needs to be created and when magic truly happens. This fundamental truth hasn't changed in, well, forever. But what has changed dramatically is where you reach the consumer. It's more matrixed and more complex, and as Alan says, radio allows people to imagine. It's an open canvas, and what's better than that? Second, the new tools that we can all create with are really fun, and the adoption is ramping up. Companies are starting to systematically accelerate the creation of programming and advertising production, which will save costs, increase speed to market, and best of all, allow the talent of craftspeople to focus on their high-value talents. Finally, technology is a glittering lure. It fades away to introduce new tech, but what sticks around are the human emotions. It's so important to remember the tools are not the idea. They are the enabler. They are not the pilot, they're the co-pilot. And plumbing should never come before the poetry.
If you'd like to learn more about radio and its many benefits, we invite you to visit us at rab.com, or you can email us directly at askrab@rab.com. Until next time, it's Radio on Main Street.